All right, once again, it's another Friday afternoon, 5 p.m.
Double happy hour.
That's right, at 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. For the next hour with me, my lovely wife, co-host, and engineer extraordinaire, Heidi Morales Ryan, as we continue our series that we've been doing now for, boy, I don't know how long we've been doing this How Music Changed thing, but it's incredible. The basic premise is very simple. We've got 250 specific topics that we plan to cover in depth, which we hope will eventually convey the entire history of recorded music. Yeah, very little thing like that.
I hope we can live long enough to complete this mission.
By the time I'm about 170 or so, we'll probably have it done. But this has been great fun, regardless of how far we actually do get. Our latest series, which we've been running now, is dedicated to the pop music of really the early rock and roll era into the heart of the rock and roll era, 1955 until the 60s, actually. We're calling this Transistor Days, or simply American Hit Radio, because these are the years when rock and roll began to take over and pretty much changed the face of what music had been. It was just exactly the point of the whole How Music Changed series, isn't it? Well, so far we've covered 12 shows. We've done, we've made it all the way up to 1959, and this show will actually represent the end of our coverage of the 50s. Now, if you've been following the series, I really hope you have, because it's been incredible fun, and I hope it's informative as well. But each show, you could feel a significant change in the direction of music from 1955 with show number one, and now, as we are ending the 50s, you get this sense that rock and roll is changing considerably. In fact, indelibly, because what's happening at this point is it's almost, I don't want to say gone, but rock and roll is no longer the only game in town as it had been maybe in shows number 7 and 8 and 9, and when we were covering the years 1957 into 58. At this point in time, a lot of things begin to happen to change the face of popular music. The first is the novelty record. There were so many novelty records that were coming out around this time that it really diluted the intensity of what rock and roll was. The other thing that was happening on a more positive front was that R&B artists were beginning to be able to find their way onto the pop charts, something that might not have happened had it not been for the work that rock and roll had done in order to allow R&B to become a national phenomenon as an ingredient in rock and roll. So we're going to cover all of this as we move through today's show. But we're going to start, since I mentioned novelty songs, perhaps it's a good place to start our show with one of the weirder ones that I can think of. There's a song that came out in mid-1959 by an artist named Preston Epps. It was an instrumental. He simply called it bongo rock. Yeah, it's as weird as it sounds. But that's not enough. What's really weird about this is that in 1973, somebody else put out an album called The Incredible Bongo Band. And this 1973 version of, or this album by The Incredible Bongo Band, they recorded their own version of bongo rock. That version eventually became huge because it was used for breaks by all the hip hop artists that were beginning to come out in the late 70s, early 80s. It became hugely popular as a sample with hip hop producers all over the world. But it all begins rather humbly as a minor hit single for this guy named Preston Epps. On American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here is Bongo Rock. We'll be right back. All right, was that ridiculous enough for you?
Oh, it's totally groovy. I can totally see why people would love that. Are you kidding me?
I just find it totally absurd. I mean, it's nothing but a blues progression, a very simple blues progression, with somebody banging away 16th notes on bongos.
It's like original surf rock.
It is. It really is one of the original surf rock songs, because surf rock wasn't really even a trend yet.
Right.
So in that sense, it does manage to kick something off. But if you don't find that to be ridiculous enough, maybe I can up the ante just a little bit.
All right.
We'll start off with the show with the absurd. There was a guy named Jesse Lee Turner. He was struggling to have a hit record. He was on all these different record labels. He put out something like, the story goes that he recorded about 15 songs and none of them sold at all, except to maybe like his own friends or something. He really just had no luck. But then in 1959, he came up with this really strange idea for a novelty record, just like they did with like David Seville did with the Chipmunks and such. He started playing with his voice, and he came up with the idea of a song called Little Space Girl.
Aww.
And this also became a top 20 hit. Like Preston Epps, it went to number 20. Little Space Girl by Jesse Lee Turner went all the way to number 20. On the pop charts. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here is the one-hit wonder, Jesse Lee Turner.
I was strolling through the park one night, and oh, I felt so blue, when I heard a little voice say,
I'm so lonely too.
Then I turned around to look, and to my surprise, a little space girl sat there crying right before my eyes. Stepping up a little closer to see what I could see, she said,
Mr. Eggman, will you please marry me?
I said, why no, I couldn't do that. Well, that just wouldn't be right. 'Cause you and me and you, we don't even look alike. 'Cause you've got four arms,
the better to hold you.
Three lips,
the better to kiss you.
Three eyes,
all the better to see. I can really rock and swing, 'cause I've got more of everything. Oh, Mr. Eggman, will you marry me?
Then I said, what will people think when we go strolling by? Why, they not only laugh at us, they lay right down and die. Then they'd put you and me in jail, there we would be. And the people, they'd come from miles around just to look at you and me. 'Cause you've got four arms,
the better to hold you.
Three lips,
the better to kiss you.
Three eyes, this thing's gone far enough. I've had enough of this. She said,
please, Mr. Eggman, just one little kiss.
I said, okay, 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 but then you go away. But when I finished kissing her, I had this to say. Oh, you've got four arms,
the better to hold you.
Three lips,
the better to kiss you.
Three eyes.
All right, then.
Oh, sure.
I don't think I'd get much of an argument saying that that was absolutely ridiculous.
That's goofy.
Oh, God. Well, let's go from the ridiculous to the sublime now, though. Right from the summer of 1959, another one-hit wonder. This time, the artist's name is Phil Phillips. And all I can say is that I'm glad that this guy never fell in love with me. This song has got to be one of the spookiest love songs I've ever heard in my life. I mean, really, where the hell is the Sea of Love? would you want to go there with this guy? I have no idea what Phillips and his cronies had in mind when he got his intended to the Sea of Love, but maybe it's best not to ask. I mean, on this song, the vocals go off key, the piano endlessly drones on and on. But I'm afraid that I might sound as though I hate this song, but that is absolutely not my intention. This is just one of the wig-liftingly weird, scary love songs I've ever heard in my life, and I find it absolutely intense.
Mesmerizing, even.
90.3 WHBC, here's Phil Phillips trying to scare you to follow him to the Sea of Love.
Tom, you might be disturbed by that song, but some people think it's just a haunting love melody. In the hands of the Honey Drippers, it sure was.
I would call it spooky, not haunting. But yeah, I mean, yeah, the Honey Drippers added strings. That's Robert Plant's band.
Right.
And I think it was in the 90s or so. They had that really pretty version of it. They took off all the rough edges. But I love it like that because yeah. It's crazy weird with the guys humming in the background and warbling around and that other guy going bum, 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 bum. It's a really strange recording. All right. Meanwhile, let's talk about Ray Charles. This song is his very first top 40 song in July of 1959. It went to number 6. And it's the song, What Did I Say? Now, Ray Charles is the personification of the place where blues meets gospel meets jazz meets R&B. In his voice, all the major movements of black musical culture were brought together. His songs were the embodiment of them all. No better example of this blend exists on the pop charts than this song, What Did I Say? It was the result of a jam session during a show in Pittsburgh. It was that simple.
Wow.
What Did I Say happened to be more than 5 minutes long when they recorded it in the studio, so they cut it in half and spread it on both sides of the single.
Great idea.
Right? Virtually every ingredient of this record was innovative in its time, from the rollicking, funky rhythm to the churchy call and response vocals to the use of the electric piano, which, by the way, heretofore had never appeared on a pop song. The first time the electric piano made it on a pop song. Charles neatly summarized where music was headed, and he did it instinctively. since we've got both sides put together, let's play it, both the A side and the B side of the single, What Did I Say? Really just as one long track. On 90.3 WHPC, here's the 5-minute version of What Did I Say? Yeah. All right, indeed. Making me feel all right, too.
Oh, my God. I think I just had a little dance break.
I mean, you can see here that all of the real innovations of the year 1959, at, by this point in time, were coming from R&B artists like Ray Charles. What Ray was doing there was more or less providing the impetus, the food, really, that rock and roll needed, the shot in the arm, for it to retain its relevance. Because it was people like John Lennon and all other rock stars or rock and roll, future rock and rollers, who were listening intently and started using that sort of material to write their own songs.
Inspirational.
I guess I'm not trying to put it down at all. I mean, this next song, I love this next song by Sam Cooke. You could say that this basically goes back to the teenage thing that rock and roll started out as in the 50s. The song is called Only 16. And he wrote the song, by the way, for Lou Rawls' stepsister, who had turned 16.
Aww.
So it was a nice gesture. Cute. But he actually intended to give the song to an actor, Steve Roland. I don't remember him, but he was a Western star. He was in Bonanza and shows like that. I think The Rifleman. But his manager disliked the song, so they turned it down, which means that it went back to Sam Cooke and said, okay, you don't want it? I'll do it. Good move.
Nice.
It was a nice big hit for Sam Cooke in 1959. A 90.3 WHPC, here is Only 16.
She was only 16. I loved her so, but she was 16. Too young to fall 16. In love. And I was too young to know. We'd laugh and 16, we'd sing and do the 16, little things that made my heart glow. But she was 16, too young to fall 16, in love. And I was too young to know. Why did I give my heart so fast? It never will happen again. But I was a mere lad of 16. I've aged a year since then. She was only 16, only 16, with eyes that would glow. But she was 16, too young to fall 16, in love. And I was too young to know.
Then why did you give your heart so fast?
Boy, it never will happen again.
But you were a mere lad of 16.
I've aged a year since then. She was only 16, only 16, with eyes that would glow. But she was 16, too young to fall 16, in love. And I was too young to know. But she was 16, too young to fall 16, in love. And I was too young to know. Oh, she's 16, too young to fall 16, in love. And I was too
shores of the Delaware Bay.
right, a couple of back-to-back rock and roll singles there from 1959, which we've been covering for this entire show. You'd be surprised, Heidi, to learn that those songs, though, actually did not perform as well as most of the other things we've covered so far.
I am surprised.
Only 16, like, stalled at number 28. Not bad, but for a song that's universally acknowledged as a classic, that's not all that high. And the Chuck Berry song barely cracked the top 40. It crept up to number 37 and then vanished. And yet that song, you know, Linda Ronstadt did a cover version of it that was huge. I mean, everybody knows these songs as being classics, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of classics, let's play the song that became the last rock and roll instrumental of the decade. It was actually written and recorded by the brothers Santo and Johnny Farina. Their dad tried to convince them that they really needed to learn how to play pedal steel guitar. And they did obviously quite a good job of it. The one night they had trouble getting to sleep after a gig, so they started to write this song. They really liked what they did, but they spent a year and a half shopping the song around, trying to get somebody who would be willing to release it.
Oh.
Can you believe that? Finally, it gets picked up and it becomes the number one song.
Wow.
At the end of 1959. So there you go. It's a good thing that they basically...
Yeah, good thing they had persistence.
Exactly. Santo and Johnny with Sleepwalk on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Their dad was right.
Yeah, I mean, really, yet another killer classic that almost didn't happen, that came out on something called Canadian American Records.
Boy, they had really gone around to everybody, it seems, and
right?
Finally ended up with this label.
Not only were they one-hit wonders, but I think it was a one-hit label, Canadian American Records. I've never heard of anything ever again. Also, that song was recorded in New York City, which surprises me. I always... basically associated that song with the South somehow.
Like a Nashville type thing.
Well, speaking of New York, our next artist, Nina Simone, recorded her own version of a song that was originally intended to be a duet from Porgy and Bess, I Loves You, Porgy. And she managed to pull out a top 20 hit with it.
Wow.
Had the most successful version. I mean, James Brown recorded it, Chaka Khan, Bill Evans, Billie Holiday, but it was... the version by Nina Simone that became the most famous. And she does own it, as you'll hear now. On 90.3 WHBC, here's Nina Simone performing I Loves You, Porgy.
Mm-hmm. can keep me, I wanna stay with you forever, and I'll be glad. Yes, I love you, Pogi. Don't let him take me. Don't let him handle me with his hot hands. If you can keep me, I want to stay here with you forever. I've got my man.
It makes me want to clap whenever I hear that song.
It's sublime.
It's really, it's so emotionally intense, not just her vocals, but her piano playing is just...
The selection of notes.
Sublime is a great word. It's really something else.
And just well chosen.
You notice what's happening here, Heidi. In 1959, you had to have a broad range of tastes if you were really going to appreciate all of the great things that were happening in this year. If you were just going to be a kid who liked rock and roll, you were going to miss out on some of the best records. Or if you were somebody who was a jazz freak, or you know, maybe you dig Nina Simone, but you had to be open-minded to also appreciate where Ray Charles was coming from.
Oh, yes.
You know, all this stuff was happening at the same time, and that's why you can hear the distinct change that's taking place. And speaking of change, since this is show 13, I should mention that if you're interested in hearing the previous shows in this series to see how we got to this point, go to AmericanHitNetwork.com. But we've got all of our shows on the website, and you'll find this entire series there, shows 1 through 12, not to mention about 400 other shows from our Wednesday show and also every series that we've done here for the How Music Changed series. They're all just there for the taking. So please check it out, AmericanHitNetwork.com. All right, how about another, what I would call a novelty record, a bit of a wacky thing. You might know the name Wink Martin. If you watched a lot of TV in the 80s, like game shows, if you're the type of person that watched game shows, Wink Martindale was like that guy. He was the host of Tic-Tac-Doe, High Rollers, a show called Gambit, all that sort of stuff. He started out as a DJ, and he just found this spoken word piece, rather strangely. This song dates all the way back to the story dates back to the 18th century. British farmer's wife had this almanac where they basically were combining the ideas of how a deck of cards could double as a prayer book. It became a hit song for a country artist in the late 40s, and then Wink Martindale picked it up and recorded his own version of the song, called it Deck of Cards in 1959, and his version went top 10, went all the way to number 7 on American Network, 90.3 WHBC. Here's Wink Martindale.
During the North African campaign, a bunch of soldier boys had been on a long hike, and they arrived in a little town called Casino. The next morning, being Sunday, several of the boys went to church. A sergeant commanded the boys in church, and after the chaplain had read the prayer, the text was taken up next. Those of the boys who had a prayer book took them out, but this one boy had only a deck of cards, and so he spread them out. The sergeant saw the cards and said, "Soldier, put away those cards." After the services were over, the soldier was taken prisoner and brought before the provost marshal. The marshal said, "Sergeant, why have you brought this man here?" "For playing cards in church, sir." "And what have you to say for yourself, son?" "Much, sir," replied the soldier. The marshal said, "I hope so, for if not, I shall punish you more than any man was ever punished." The soldier said, "Sir, I have been on the march for about 6 days. I had neither Bible nor prayer book, but I hope to satisfy you, sir, with the purity of my intentions." And with that, the boy started his story. "You see, sir, when I look at the ace, it reminds me that there is but one God, and the deuce reminds me that the Bible is divided into two parts, the Old and the New Testament. When I see the tray, I think of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And when I see the four, I think of the four evangelists who preached the gospel. There was Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And when I see the five, it reminds me of the five wise virgins who trimmed their lamps. There were 10 of them, 5 were wise and were saved. 5 were foolish and were shut out. When I see the 6, it reminds me that in 6 days God made this great heaven and earth. When I see the 7, it reminds me that on the 7th day God rested from his great work. And when I see the 8, I think of the 8 righteous persons God saved when he destroyed this earth. There was Noah, his wife, their sons, and their wives. And when I see the 9, I think of the lepers our Savior cleansed, and 9 out of the 10 didn't even thank him. When I see the 10, I think of the 10 commandments God handed down to Moses on a table of stone. When I see the king, it reminds me there is but one king of heaven, God Almighty. And when I see the queen, I think of the blessed Virgin Mary, who is queen of heaven, and the jack of knave is the devil. When I count the number of spots on a deck of cards, I find 365, the number of days in a year. There are 52 cards, the number of weeks in a year. There are 4 suits, the number of weeks in a month. There are 12 picture cards, the number of months in a year. There are 13 tricks, the number of weeks in a quarter. So, you see, sir, my pack of cards serves me as a Bible, an almanac, and a prayer book. And friends, the story is true. I know. I was that soldier.
Okay, Wink.
You know, I was almost going to let him get away with it until that. But there you have it. Boy, the novelty records of 1959. All right. Now, this next one, this could have been a novelty record, but it was just so incredibly good that it ended up becoming one of the most important songs, really, of the year. Maybe the single most important song of the year, 1959. Bobby Darin had been struggling, like mightily struggling, to have anything even resembling a hit. He was actually a bit of a pariah. Oh. The labels were dropping him and trying to get rid of him. He ended up on Atlantic, and Atlantic didn't really want him either. They put him on ATCO, and everything he did failed until eventually he decided to try some stuff that was deliberately juvenile. Songs like Splish Splash, I Was Taking a Bath, and, you know, Queen of the Hop. And that made him a star. It worked. But he wanted to do music that was a bit more mature. He recorded the song Dream Lover, became a big hit, reached number two. I don't know what had made him decide to record a version of Mac the Knife as its follow-up to Dream Lover, but I have to admit it was an incredibly inspired choice. Louis Armstrong's interpretation was obviously Darin's blueprint. He stays really close to Armstrong's vocal, but he adds that sophisticated finger-snapping cool thing, you know? The pseudo-hipster-come-gangster lyrics work that way. The orchestra builds and builds with that near riotous, you know, swing and collapse at the end. And then Darin adds that line, "Look out, old Mac is back." Perfect, right? He owns it. I mean, up to this point, I would have given it to Louis Armstrong, but 9 weeks at number one and a record that actually, it crossed generational lines. Everybody loved this song. Bobby Darin is no longer the singer of silly rock songs, but the purveyor of modern pop swing. On 90.3 WHPC, here's Mac the Knife.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth big, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves though wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life. And someone sneaking round the corner, could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know, where a cement bag just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the weight, dear. Five will get you 10, old Mackey's back in town. Not to hear about Louis Miller, he disappeared, babe, after drawing out all his hard-earned cash. And now Maggie spins just like a sailor. Could it be our boy's done something rash? Nah, Jimmy Diver. Ho, ho! Yes, Sue Tawdry. Woo, Miss Lottie Lenya. And old Lucy Brown. Oh, the line forms on the right, babe. Now that Maggie's back in town. I said, Jenny Diver, whoa, Suki Tawdry, look out to Miss Lottie Lenya and old Lucy Brown. Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Maggie's back in town.
Dan, just aside, Frank Sinatra.
You know, honestly, that's probably the 10,000th time that you or I, or maybe even the listeners, have heard that song. And yet, I don't think any of us are sick of it. It just goes on and on and on. It's one of those songs that will be great forever. Of course, Bobby Darin with his version of Mac the Knife. Now, this next track I want to play, this next artist, is somebody who's been around for like literally half a century. Imagine that. He probably recorded something like 40 albums. None of them ever charted. Imagine that. He's only had one top 40 hit song, and it's this. And it's a minor hit. It wasn't a big deal. It's just, the artist is Ronnie Hawkins. The song is called Mary Lou. Most people don't remember it. I just think it's cool because it's credited to Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks. The Hawks, by the way, would eventually become the band. Levon Helm.
Oh.
You know, all, and...
That's right.
All, that entire crew. They were Ronnie's backup band. And this is them. And really their first taste of fame when this song broke the top 40 with this song called Mary Lou on 90.3 WHPC.
I'm going to tell you a story about a Mary Lou. I mean the kind of a woman make a fool of you. She make a young man groan and an old man pain. The way she took my money was a crying shame.
Mary Lou.
She took my diamond ring.
Mary Lou.
She took my watch and chain.
Mary Lou.
She took the keys to my Cadillac car. Jumped in my kitty and she drove afar. Left me stranded in a Kalamazoo. Making her a fortune off a fool like you. She got her a rich man, had a dozen kids. Drove that cat until he flipped his lid.
Mary Lou.
She took my diamond ring.
Mary Lou.
She took my watch and chain.
Mary Lou.
She took the keys to my Cadillac car. Jumped in my kitty and she drove afar. In a town about a week ago, told me she was sorry that she hurt me so. I had a 55 Ford and a $2 bill. When she took that, a man, it gave me a chill.
Mary Lou.
She took my diamond ring.
Mary Lou.
She took my watch and chain.
Mary Lou.
She took the keys to my Cadillac car. Jumped in my kitty and she drove her far. Well, she jumped in my kitty and she drove her far.
All right, Ronnie Hawkins there, of course, with now the band, then Ronnie and the Hawks. We've got time for just one more, Heidi. So let's squeeze this one in. Johnny Mathis took out the year 1959 with this song. It was a song that was written by the piano player Errol Garner with words by Johnny Burke. This is one of those songs why the jazz crowd really objected to him. They really would complain. They said he had no subtlety and, you know. But I mean, this song, his style of singing perfectly suited the romantic material that he favored. I thought so. Depending on your view, this song, Misty, contains either the best or the worst elements of what makes Johnny Mathis famous. The phrase, on my own, by itself, displays some of the most pyrotechnical styling that he ever devised. He plunges from the floating whisper of a high note, then he goes down almost three octaves within the space of a heartbeat.
Wow.
I mean, five decades on, Mathis's distinct voice remains instantly recognizable, and I got nothing but great things to say about Misty. I want to thank you so much for listening to American Hit Radio here on WHBC 90.3. We will be back next week, folks. So thanks for listening. Part 14, and we enter the 60s. So come on back and tune in then. See you then, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Look at me. As helpless as a kitten
up a tree. And I feel like I'm clinging to a cloud I can't understand. I get misty just holding your hand. Walk my way, and a thousand violins begin to play. Or it might be the sound of your hello, that music I hear. I get misty the moment you're near. You can say that you're leading me on, but it's just what I want you to do. Don't you notice how hopelessly I'm lost? That's why I'm following you. On my own, would I wander through this wonderland alone, ever knowing my right foot from my left, my hat from my glove? I'm too misty and too much in love. My left, my hat from my glove. I'm too misty and too much in love.